Hello and welcome to part 4 of our circulation and respiration module. This is the part you've all been waiting for, which is the balancing protocol. This is the part where we get to put all the knowledge that we've learned in the previous sections into action to actually help people to get well. Before I begin, I want to make sure that you're aware, as usual, that this presentation isn't intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional. It's not medical advice. So if you're listening in for your own ailments, then make sure that if you're under the care of a doctor, that you consult with your doctor. If you're listening in for your clients, make sure that you're always making them aware that you're providing education, not diagnosis and not treatment. So let's jump in. So we're at the last part. We've gone through how everything works, what can go wrong, how do you assess the systems, and now we're going to look at balancing protocols. So let's go back and look at the things that damage the cardiovascular system. Whatever things damage it, we want to remove. These are obvious things, but you know what? A lot of people overlook it. A lot of people get so wrapped up in the fancy herbs and the supplements and the nutrients that what they forget is to talk about the basics. If somebody's eating sugar and high fructose corn syrup, number one, it's killing their immune system. Number two, it's causing insulin resistance or causing rises in insulin, even if it's not at the point of insulin resistance, which damages the cardiovascular system. Damage to the immune system can affect both systems because what happens? There's infections that go on, and we have to deal with those infections. There's oxidative byproducts in our everyday life, and they need the good antioxidants, anti-inflammatories, and a good immune system to protect. Processed grains, fruit juices, and inflammatory foods. Wow. So these aren't just sugar. It's not pure sugar, but it's any kind of sugar. You can be talking agave, maple syrup, honey even. They're high glycemic, and we really want to be avoiding them as much as possible to keep the person well and healthy. And as far as grains are concerned, processed grains, flour, that's rises the insulin up as well, the insulin and glucose, and it's just not a good thing. And a lot of people are allergic to grains. A lot of people don't digest them well. So we got to be watching for those things, and they can damage the system. Alcohol, certainly. So many people think, that glass of red wine a day because it has all those antioxidants. But you know what? I'd rather find other ways to get those antioxidants. Alcohol damages liver cells. Alcohol damages brain cells. One of the byproducts of alcohol is acetaldehyde, which can be very dangerous to the system. It's something that also candida organisms produce. Acetaldehyde is an irritant to the skin, the eyes, the mucous membranes, the throat, and the respiratory tract. And then heated and trans fats. We know this, but sometimes we forget, so I thought it was worth reminding. Nobody should be eating mayonnaise, margarine, or hydrogenated fats. And even those special mayonnaises, mayonnaise, and other things like that, they're still heated fats. They may not be trans fats like the margarine and mayonnaise, but they're heated and they get oxidized. So really being careful about the fats that are chosen. It's not the quantity of fat, it's the quality of fat. And finally, the biggest controversy of all is caffeine. Yeah, a little bit of caffeine in green tea, not damaging at all, actually can be very supportive. But drinking big cups of coffee every day, especially the way most people do it with their cream and sugar in it, or their whatever, Kahlua and cream. Caffeinated beverages contain tannins, coffee in particular. Green tea, like I said, not a problem because it supports the liver. A little chocolate here and there can be cardioprotective, but coffee can be a problem. You know, and so many people are jumping back on the coffee bandwagon, even though they'd been off the coffee bandwagon and telling all their clients to get off of it. But then this whole bulletproof thing came in and add some butter and MCT oil to your coffee and it makes it good. I don't buy it. I've seen people in that state where they just need their next coffee fix. So it's just, I'm just against it. So I may be unpopular by being against it, but I am. So all these foods and these fast food places, you know that they're damaging. So it's not the amount of fat. It's not the amount of fat. It's what? The quality of the fat. So there's other contributing conditions that need to be looked at. Why is the cardiovascular system out? Why are the lipid levels out? What's going on? Well, we know that hypothyroid contributes to high cholesterol. We know that adrenal stress raises cortisol levels. What does cortisol do? Well, in addition to constricting blood vessels and having a damaging effect and raising blood pressure, it also raises blood sugar. And the sugar increases the level of insulin. And what does insulin do? Damages the blood vessel lining, which can lead to atherosclerosis and also hypertension. Of course, insulin resistance directly correlated inflammatory response and plus it's damaging to the vessel linings. Diabetes, same thing as insulin resistance, only worse. Damaging to the vessels, the small vessels. Fatty liver. When the liver gets fatty and congested, it can't make the right amounts of the fats. It can't circulate the fats. It can't clear itself of these fats. So fatty liver is a big contributing factor. We have to be able to rule these things out and address what? The root cause. Biliary stasis, again, where the bile isn't coming through and the bile helps to eliminate the cholesterol. Poor fat metabolism, just not digesting fat properly, but not utilizing it properly. Even hypoglycemia, because you know what? Hypoglycemia is usually reactive hypoglycemia, and there's periods of high insulin followed by periods of low blood sugar. So the insulin is just such a culprit in cardiovascular disease. Nutrient deficiencies, we looked at so many of those nutrients before. Nutrient deficiencies are critically important here. We need the antioxidants, the A, the E, the C. We need the vitamin D to protect the heart. But the B vitamins are super important as well. We've got vitamin B6 and 12 and folate that are super important for maintaining proper levels of homocysteine, which is a damaging effect. Niacin is a vasodilator. And then, of course, multiple sclerosis. When somebody's got a severe autoimmune disease like that and it affects the nerves, it's going to affect the cardiovascular system. So these are all things to be looking at and looking for. So what are some of the vitamins that support cardiovascular health? We just mentioned some of them. We mentioned niacin B3 as a vasodilator. We mentioned B6, B9, which is folate, and B12, because they're important in homocysteine metabolism. What about B1 and B2? Those two are critically important in the Krebs cycle, as is niacin. Krebs cycle is where we produce energy. If the heart muscle can't produce enough energy, we're screwed, basically, right? It just can't pump properly. So we need good levels of all our B vitamins. Vitamin C and E are antioxidants. They control the amount of inflammation in the body. Very protective. So what are some other nutrients that support heart health? CoQ10. You know, a lot of people are on statins and it depletes CoQ10. But even that aside, CoQ10 is an important nutrient for the Krebs cycle. What about EPA, DHA, and GLA, those good fats, the omega 3 and 6? Having them in the right balance is super important for cardiovascular health. They're anti-inflammatory, they're anti-spasmodic. Minerals, but especially magnesium and zinc. Magnesium is amazing heart health nutrient. It helps to reduce the tension and the spasming. And it just has been shown to be really effective in blood pressure management. And deficiencies are rampant in our country and in the world probably because people aren't eating enough green leafy vegetables. So all the tools that you have for helping them to change their diet and moving more towards plants and green smoothies and green salads and green leafy vegetables at dinner, those are really important for maintaining magnesium levels. Zinc, super important. Zinc is responsible for well over 100 different enzyme pathways in the body. Zinc is important for getting the nutrients in, right? Because it's a cofactor for stomach acid. Zinc is important for hormone balance. It's important in insulin and sugar regulation. So zinc is super important for the heart. Arginine is a precursor to nitric oxide, which is a potent vasodilator. We have so many people that are low in that, and it contributes to high blood pressure. And I've seen people supplemented with arginine and or other nitric oxide producing herbs and supplements and seen a reversal in their blood pressure. Carnitine. Carnitine is important for shuttling fat into the cells. And if the fat doesn't get shuttled into the cells, where does it stay? It stays in the bloodstream. N-acetylcysteine is a super important antioxidant precursor to glutathione. And lipoic acid, similarly, it's a really important antioxidant. We need to be protecting people's hearts, and these are the nutrients that we find to be out of balance. Now, I'm not proposing supplementation of all these nutrients. What I'm proposing is evaluation to see if they need it and making sure their diet is balanced enough to get these and then supplement when needed. So here's some herbs and foods that support cardiovascular health. These are general cardiovascular health herbs and foods. We have some slides later that are going to talk about specifics. And I want you to make sure that you get that I'm not teaching you a this for that approach. What I'm teaching you is that underlying balance that needs to happen before the person is put on a whole slew of supplements and herbs. But these are specific ones that have been found to be helpful for the cardiovascular system. What I recommend is that you keep these lists handy. There'll be a bunch of lists like this. And that you do some research when you have a client. If we went through each of these herbs, the whole indications and contraindications and uses and everything, it'd take us hours and hours and hours. In fact, it could take us days. I did an herbal medicine course where we went through all these herbs, and it was once a week for 2 years, and it was a 6-hour class once a week for 2 years. So there's a lot to this, but I would say, you know, you have somebody that presents, they have cardiovascular health. That's the way you learn. That's how I've learned a lot of what I know is it's like, I wonder what that is. You start to look it up. You pull out your reference guides, right? You look on the internet, but use reputable sources on the internet, right? Don't just go to Wikipedia or LiveStrong. Go to reputable sources. And if you go find a source that you're not sure of, check their references. Okay. And if they've got good references, if they got a long list of references and they just check out, great. But you can, a Materia Medica, an herbal Materia Medica, there's a number of them. And find one that's good that has lists of the herbs and look them up. That's what I do every time. I don't have everything memorized. There's a lot I do because guess what? We use them a lot. But the ones that I don't, then I don't have them memorized. Hawthorn berry, we're going to talk about more about that when we talk about muscular because it's a very important tonifying agent for the heart muscle. But some of the others, natto kinase. Natto is the food. It's a fermented soybean food, very traditional in Japan. And natto kinase is an enzyme that's derived from it. It's amazing for blood pressure control. And it's amazing for breaking down clots. Serrapeptidase is similar, but not quite as potent and specific for the cardiovascular system. But those are very good enzymes that are really high potency. And then we have garlic and ginger and ginkgo, turmeric. You know, these are all really potent antioxidants. Some of them are antimicrobial. Ginger is an amazing anti-inflammatory. Ginkgo has very good properties for brain and circulation is what it's most known for. But same thing, microcirculation gets improved by ginkgo. And turmeric, we know turmeric is so good for so many things. Silica is another one that is important for structure. We use it for hair and nails, but also in other structure in the body. Basil, flaxseed. Flaxseed's high in omega-3. Basil's a great adaptogen and antimicrobial. Oregano, great antimicrobial, also great in the lungs as well. Dietary fiber, so important. People have to be eating fiber. A lot of people are going on ketogenic diets, and what they're doing is they're just focusing on meat and dairy and eggs because those are supposedly good for them because they're going on a ketogenic diet. The truth of the matter is, that's not true. The truth of the matter is, a ketogenic diet's not supposed to have that much protein. It's supposed to have about a gram per kilogram a day, which for a 150-pound man, that's about 70 grams. Very small amount. And yet people are overdoing it. They're doing them wrong, and they're just eating too much processed fat. They're not even being careful about what fats they choose. At least on a paleo diet, there's a lot of specification, eating organic and unprocessed and all. In a keto diet, a lot of people are just taking it as, I just have to eat a lot of fat. And they equate eating a lot of fat with eating a lot of animal protein. And so they're eating bacon and steak and all this stuff all day long and missing the fiber. That's dangerous for the heart. You got to get tons and tons of vegetables in every day. And this is something you got to educate people on. It's good for everything in the body. You got to get tons of vegetables. Yeah, you might have to find the ones that they tolerate if they've got some food intolerances. Then you've got to fix the source of the food intolerances. It's all about getting to the root cause. Berberine's potent antimicrobial antioxidant. Very good for that. Now, red yeast rice, I put caution because guess what? Red yeast rice acts as a statin. So it has some of the same downsides as statins. So it's a last resort before they go on statins. It can deplete CoQ10 just like statins do. And then, of course, spirulina, which is like so amazingly high in protein and antioxidants and all the stuff that comes from the sea. So this is basic stuff. You want to design a diet for your people, especially with cardiovascular disease, that supports their heart and includes a lot of these foods in it. We're going to get into more details about specific conditions. But for me, it's all about the general, like keep getting the balance first while you're doing everything else. So here's herbs and nutrients for respiration. Again, this is not an exhaustive list. This is some of the ones that I like best. Cordyceps is great for the kidneys and the lungs. It's just really supportive. Quercetin is like an antihistamine, breaks down mucus and histamines. Reishi and mullein and licorice and eucalyptus and slippery elm is one of my absolute favorites. Licorice actually has some steroidal properties, so it's very anti-inflammatory. Eucalyptus, we sit with the vaporizers and breathe in the eucalyptus and it helps open and clear the airways. Slippery elm is amazing soother for the coughs. And also it's a soother for the lungs. It's kind of weird because it doesn't go through the lungs, but it's almost like it has this energetic component to it that talks to the lungs and gets the lungs to relax. And I've read this over and over again. Lobelia is a very strong herb and I don't use it very often because it can actually cause vomiting and diarrhea. It's pretty potent. You only tiny drops. So I would, again, use that as a last resort and also look at that as something that you're going to research carefully and make sure you're really careful about the dose and really careful about the fact that they need to know the dose. OSHA is great for the respiratory, the sinuses. Peppermint just opens everything up. Plantain's real soothing. Lungwort is a very specific herb for the lung that helps to soothe it. Oregano has, of course, antimicrobial properties, but it's also good for calming spasms in the lung. Essential oils, we got a bunch of them. Cypress, marjoram, melaleuca, and red mandarin. These are good, and you can use them in a diffuser. Like somebody has problems with breathing, you want to put them in a diffuser. Nutrients, we've got NAC, N-acetylcysteine, which is an amazing mucolytic agent. Mucolytic, what's that? Break down mucus, kill mucus. So NAC is an amazing mucolytic. And actually, some people do it in a nebulizer. You know what a nebulizer is? Is this little machine that has these tubes coming out, and you actually breathe it. It's kind of like a vaporizer, but you're putting it right into your lungs, and you can put herbs into that nebulizer, and then you can get them right delivered into the lung. So a lot of docs will put licorice and NAC and other things in and have the person breathe it to get the stuff delivered right to the lungs. Of course, our omega-3s and zinc and vitamins A, C, and other antioxidants are all super important from a nutrient perspective. Let's talk about the nutrient and lifestyle approaches to balance both the cardiovascular and the respiratory. These are obvious, but I just feel like I need to say them again. Of course, stop smoking. Not only does it clog the lungs and cause all kinds of damage, there's chemicals in there, toxins in there that get into the bloodstream and damage the arterial walls. Get to the right weight. Exercise, manage stress, grounding, something that you can do. Have them go outside and walk in the grass. And if they're not open to that, there are some grounding mats, earthing mats that they can stand on. I actually stand on one, not all day, but part of the day while I'm standing at my desk. Whole food, plant-based diet, high in greens, fruits, and vegetables. Antioxidant rich. I'm not a huge fan of a super low-fat diet unless somebody does have an APOE4 gene, in which case we got to look at that and I get them as much of good fats, whole food fats. I'm not a fan of oils. I'm a fan of whole food fats. But whole food, plant-based diet, mostly plants. If somebody's going to eat a little meat, fine. If they're going to eat a little fish, fine. Make sure you're having them eat it clean. But I'd say a lot of the diet should be the plant-based. And that the studies abound with that. High antioxidant diet. Antioxidants are king. They're going to soothe any inflammation that's in the blood vessels. They're going to soothe any inflammation that's in the lungs. Super important. Antioxidants are so super important. Of course, people have to sleep. We already know what lack of sleep does to insulin resistance, and that's one of the big contributing factors. But we also know that it affects brain health, it affects circulation, it affects oxygenation, so many things. Sleep, super important. We have a whole module on sleep. Omega-3 fats, which are EPA and DHA, and also GLA, gamma-linolenic acid. Gamma-linolenic acid is an omega-6, but it's a hard one for some people to convert to. So we sometimes have to supplement that. Of course, sugar balance. Be careful of medications. A lot of people are just taking over-the-counter anti-inflammatories, NSAIDs, which are wrecking with their gut, which are wrecking with their liver, and all that has an effect. Liver is a key component of cardiovascular health. So be careful about any medications. Get a list. Always get a list. Ask them why they're taking stuff. And for some of it, it just might be habits. Some people are taking the baby aspirin every day because they read somewhere that that was good. And then optimizing breathing habits and oxygen intake. I cannot stress this enough. Most people don't breathe properly. They do stress breathing, upper chest breathing, instead of diaphragmatic breathing. And that impacts every system in the body by not getting enough oxygen to it. So let's just look a little bit more deeply as oxygen, because this is important for you to help people to get these systems under control. It is the most essential nutrient. Think about it. We can go about 4 minutes without oxygen. Some people who are very fit and trained may be able to go 6. But it's only 4 minutes, right? And then you die. So is that the most essential nutrient? Obviously. With water, you can go probably 4 or 5 days without water. And without food, depending on your size and how much stores you have, you can go a month or more or two. I went a month once doing a therapeutic fast. The average person will breathe 12 to 18 breaths a minute. When they breathe in those short, shallow breaths, though, it stimulates a fight-flight response. The body thinks there's a tiger chasing you. Right? So we need to teach people how to optimize their breathing. 6 breaths per minute, long, slow, deep breaths. They stimulate that really healing physiology. So think about it. I mean, when I stop and breathe, I'll breathe and I'll watch my husband breathe, and he's like done 2 or 3 breaths. Before I've finished mine. And that can be trained. That can be trained. So everything that people do, whether it's running or going to the movies or dancing or playing with their kids, it all requires appropriate oxygen to the tissue. The power of breathing, this is a quote, "Breathing is the first place, not the last place, one should investigate when any disordered energy presents itself." I love that. I really think that that's super important to think about. Because we kind of look for the nutrients, we look for the herbs, we talk about food, but we don't always stop and teach people how to breathe. So what are some of the health benefits of mindful breathing? Lowering blood pressure. Here, what are we talking about here? We're talking about the cardiovascular system. Strengthens the lungs, strengthens the heart, and improves the quality of the blood. So a few other things that are not directly associated with the circulation and respiration systems, but will affect it, is the detoxification and release of toxins. That's super important. Relieves pain. That gets people out of stress mode, doesn't it? Massages organs, improves the nervous system, makes people in better moods, which improves their stress response, right? Improves cellular regeneration, increases muscle tone, strengthens the immune system, and increases digestion and assimilation of food. All of these things are critical to having a healthy respiration and circulation system. So how do you get people to do it? Teach them. Become aware of their breath. Are they breathing through their abdomen, raising their diaphragm with every breath? Or are they using their scalene muscles in their neck to pull up on the ribs to help them breathe? Very common. So have them become aware, roll their shoulders back, slightly tip the head back, place a hand about an inch away from the navel, and then do deep inhalation. I like to actually put one hand over my heart and one hand over my belly, but some people don't like to do that. But you put your hands on the belly, and on the deep inhalation, the navel should expand and hit the hand. So you're not a 1 inch away from the navel, and the navel should expand. So that's 1 inch expansion. And on the exhale, the abdomen sinks back in. So teach people. The shallow breathing doesn't fully expand the lungs and oxygenate the tissues. So what kind of activities can you teach people to do to optimize their breathing? Well, continual awareness and practice of correct breathing techniques. And I will tell you that it absolutely does become more natural. I find myself I sometimes am editing a video and I'm hearing myself do this big breath between, and it's kind of noisy, so I edit it out. But it's just a habit. It becomes a habit. The other thing that can be helpful is chiropractic care, like getting specific spinal areas and fixing the posture. Because if somebody's slumped over, you know, and their neck is forward and their shoulders are forward, it's hard to take a deep breath. Give it a try. It really is. Aerobic exercise helps. Regular yoga, Pilates, and other exercises that can work us and stretch us. Those are all helpful to optimize people's breathing. So these are things you could be teaching. Now that we've completed all the more general supports that you can offer for the cardiovascular and respiratory systems, we're going to move into more condition-specific type approaches, things that help with specific areas. And it'll be on the next video. So see you on the next one.